Today's broadcast was originally recorded on July 28th, 2025.
Don't touch Social Security. Don't touch Medicare, Medicaid. Just leave them alone.
Mm-hmm. We will not cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid benefits.
I'm not going to touch Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid.
Uh-huh. Well, you kind of touched them all. And wait till they hear about the ACA. Or Obamacare.
I got the feeling there's something right.
Know what I
mean? I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast. As heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Elsewhere in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. I am aware that coverage of Donald Trump's apparent cover-up of the release of the Jeffrey Epstein files, or lack thereof, in recent weeks has overshadowed a number of other important news items, even as I believe that coverage of Trump's cover-up here is actually a very important story with likely reverberations for his standing and support of his presidency for a very long time to come, even and perhaps especially among his own longtime MAGA supporters. But that coverage, necessary, appropriate or not, has served to obscure a number of other important stories, very important ones, from the horrific starvation crisis in Gaza at the hands of the Benjamin Netanyahu government in Israel to what could be an unprecedented health care coverage and services crisis right here in the U.S., at the hands of Donald Trump and the Republicans in the wake of the party line Republican passage of Trump's so-called One Big Beautiful Bill. Signed into law by Trump on July 4th, even as the Department of Justice and the FBI were informing the nation at almost exactly the same time that despite previously repeated promises, they would not be releasing any more Epstein files to the public, that there was no client list created by the infamous pedophile and years-long close friend of Donald Trump, and that no more investigation into the case was warranted. Coincidentally enough, just weeks, apparently, after the Attorney General secretly informed Donald Trump that, yes, he himself was named multiple times in those unreleased files. You can see how many in the media would become distracted and or consumed by that scandal. Even we have begun covering it of late here on the broadcast. And if you want to discuss that or anything else we discussed today or anything else in your mind, I will try to open the phones a little bit later this hour for those in our Southern California listening area or anywhere around the world via our kpfk.org live web stream at 818-985-5735. Because we are in the in fun drive again here at KPFK, when you call in to 818-985-KPFK, Please hit button number one if you want to talk to me on the air, or number two to donate whatever you can to help KPFK and Pacifica Radio stay on your public airwaves. Now, with all of that said, I must note the healthcare crisis I mentioned that may now be upon us in the U.S. thanks to the massive Trump GOP budget bill that slashes $1 trillion from Medicaid, likely to result in the loss of healthcare coverage for at least 10 million Americans. Well, that is really just the start of what is likely to become a very real crisis for many more millions in this country, and not only through the loss of coverage via Medicaid cuts. Over at the American Prospect, executive editor and longtime financial investigative journalist David Dayan has been warning about a $500 billion cut to Medicare. Not Medicaid, but Medicare, that has now been triggered with the passage of the Trump Republican Big Beautiful Bill. He will join us momentarily to explain why. But that means it's not just historic cuts to Medicaid, it's also historic cuts to Medicare. Unless Congress acts between now and the start of the 2026 fiscal year, which begins on October 1, in just 9 weeks. Now, Congress is on summer vacation right now. House Speaker Mike Johnson adjourned the House early to avoid more votes for now on the Epstein scandal, and they will not return to D.C. until September at this point, when they will then have, about 4 weeks to pass any new legislation to change any of this before the start of the fiscal year in October. But it is not just Medicaid and Medicare. Last week, millions of California residents began receiving notices from Covered California. That's the name of the state's Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare exchange, which allows millions of state residents to shop for health care via private insurers and receive generous federal subsidies to help radically reduce monthly premiums and overall out-of-pocket costs for health care services. California's ACA exchange is one of the strongest in the nation, frankly, and yet it began sending out notices to participants last week warning, quote, changes are coming. The letter goes on to explain, quote, beginning in 2026, your monthly premium may increase. Here's why, the letter helpfully explains. In 2021, which I will note here was under President Obama, the federal government increased
financial... Oh, that was under Biden, not Obama.
What did I say?
You
Obama.
Said Obama.
Oh, Obamacare. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
Thanks. I'm glad you're here to help me.
Yeah.
It was under President Biden in 2021. And at that time, the federal government, increased financial help for most people with insurance through the Affordable Care Act. This extra help made insurance more affordable for millions, as they explain in the letter. But unless Congress acts, the letter warns, the additional support is set to end after 2025, which would result, they note, in higher premiums for many enrollees in 2026. Now, as noted, while California has one of the best-run exchanges in the U.S., the cuts are set to kick in by the end of the year, and they will affect almost everyone across the country, not just in California, but everyone across the country who is insured via the ACA, no matter what your state may call it. It's the Obamacare exchange, and all the states have different names for it, but they will all be affected. And because you may live in a Republican-run state that doesn't have an Obamacare exchange locally, you might have purchased health care from the federal ACA exchange website. That, too, will mean your costs will be affected. As David Dayan reported at The Prospect last week, quote, within the next 90 days, the 24 million enrollees in the Affordable Care Act, ACA, health insurance exchanges will get notices about massive new cost burdens to renew their coverage. This will be perceived as a direct result of the policies of the Trump administration and congressional Republicans. That perception, he notes, has the benefit of being accurate. The combination of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act's cuts to Medicaid and, unless Congress does something about it, to Medicare, and the failure to extend enhanced ACA tax credits for exchange participants will cause roughly 15 million Americans to lose their health insurance, according to the latest estimates. Those who hang on to pay the higher rates are disproportionately likely to really need insurance due to medical conditions. This, he notes, will tend to create sicker insurance pools, meaning more claims payouts by insurers. The expectation of higher costs for insured customers, along with the pullback of trillions of dollars from the health system, has triggered insurers' need for higher premium rates and a kind of upward death spiral at this point, writes Dayan. Those who remain insured, well, they may have to choose between staying covered and other critical items in their family budgets. Back in 2017, Donald Trump and Republicans in Congress attempted to kill the Affordable Care Act entirely. They lost that effort by one single vote in the U.S. Senate at the time. But now, though the ACA is still standing and has been strengthened by Joe Biden and the Democrats, it seems that Trump and the Republicans have found another way to undermine that federally funded health care system as well, along with all of the others. Whether the media are waving red flags about this or not, it sure seems like they should. Joining us now is David Dayan, executive editor of The American Prospect, financial journalist, best-selling author, whose latest book is Monopolized: Life in the Age of Corporate Power. And full disclosure, I appear briefly in that book to discuss the corporate monopolization of our public airwaves. Oh, David Dayan, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you, Brad.
Delighted, delighted to have you here. All right. Got a lot to fly through with you. Before I dive into the ACA concerns, let's step through the Medicaid and the Medicare care cuts that will begin as early as October 1 unless Congress acts. Let's start with Medicaid. The bulk of the Medicaid cuts, estimated to take away health care from at least 10 million people, they do not actually begin until the end of next year, correct? After the 2026 midterm elections?
Yes, but I think that progressives and Democrats are relying on that way too much and imputing too much, you know, mystical-like cleverness to Republicans. One-third of those $1 trillion in cuts are already in place. The repeal of Biden-era eligibility and enrollment features that made it easier to get coverage under Medicaid, those are repealed right now. The safe staffing rule under Biden, which was a minimum amount of nurses in skilled nursing homes across the country, that is repealed right now. And so we go too far saying, oh, look how smart the Republicans were in doing this. And I'll give you one other point, which is that hospitals, when they determine whether or not they can stay in business, if they know cuts are coming in 2 years, they're not going to sit around and wait until those cuts show up to make changes to absorb it. So we're going to see hospitals, and we already are seeing them, cut staff, cut services, and even shut down because of these Medicaid cuts, even though a lot of those Medicaid cuts aren't in place right now and will be put in place in the future.
And those Medicaid cuts, even if you're not a Medicaid, the hospitals, particularly the rural hospitals, rely on those just to run the entire system. So we're already seeing this affecting hundreds of rural hospitals and health centers now, the who are either shutting down, announcing they're shutting down or cutting services. But the Medicaid, despite being slashed by $1 trillion over the next 10 years, Republicans have also included $50 billion in this bill for the rural hospitals. Will that prevent the closure of hundreds of facilities or the shutdown of services in those hospitals, David?
Well, I'm trying to figure out how $50 billion can cover $1 trillion in cuts. And, you know, I can stretch a Band-Aid pretty well, but I can't get it to cover that much territory. And I think that we're not going to really see this have a huge impact. And in fact, we don't know even how this sort of slush fund is going to be structured, who it's going to favor, what the eligibility criteria are going to be, who's going to be able mm-hmm. to acquire it and who isn't. Mm-hmm. And so and everything that we've seen in the Trump administration means it says to me that that's dependent on lobbying and consulting and favors and friends. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be too sanguine about this $50 billion hospital slush fund, which only lasts for 5 years while the cuts last forever. I'm not very happy with how that's going to cover everything and solve all the problems.
And coincidentally, those many of those rural hospitals that are shutting down are in areas where support for Donald Trump was the strongest in 2024. Moving from Medicaid cuts to Medicare, much less discussed during passage of the Republican spending and tax cut bill, is the fact that it will, unless Congress acts, and as far as I can tell, acts quickly, it will cut some $500 billion, half a trillion, from Medicare over the next
right.
10 years, beginning with $50 billion of cuts in 2026 funding as soon as October 1. Now, Medicare is not mentioned at all, as I understand it, in the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill Act, nor were the cuts to it. So why will Medicare be cut here as well unless Congress acts quickly?
Yeah, I can give you some first of all, a slight corrective. There is a program called the Medicare Support Program mm-hmm. that was actually cut in this bill. It's a program for Medicare and Medicaid dual eligibles, mm-hmm. and it helps very poor seniors afford prescription drugs. And like some of these other changes, there was a change under Biden to make that more accessible, and that was repealed and is in place right now. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be harder for poor seniors to afford their medications.
Mm-hmm.
But the bigger Medicare cuts that you're talking about is because of the cost of the bill. So this bill costs something on the order of $3.4 trillion over a 10-year period.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you have deficits in legislation, it triggers something called the Pay-as-you-go Act of 2010. And what that Pay-as-you-go Act of 2010 says is that if at the end of the year we tally up all the bills and they cost X amount of money, you have to do across the board cuts to a bunch of different accounts in the federal government in order to compensate for that.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those accounts that affect, really poor people or things like that are, mm-hmm. are exempted, like Medicaid's exempted, Social Security is exempted. However, Medicare is not exempted from those PAYGO cuts. And as you correctly indicate, it would translate because of the maximum amount that you're allowed to cut and because of the nature of this deficit, it would translate to $500 billion in Medicare cuts over the next decade. And those start immediately. Those start in fiscal year 2026. So unless Congress says we have to, let's avoid them, they're going into place. And what's interesting here is sort of the what Democrats are going to do about that. Because if you're going to get those Medicare cuts averted, you're probably going to need the support of Democrats in order to do that. And the question then becomes, are Democrats going to let Republicans lie in the bed that they made? Or are they going to act to protect seniors and avert the consequences of what Republicans put forward in this big, beautiful bill?
You mean to say that Democrats are going to need the help of Republicans to get that through? I think you had said Democrats.
Yes.
And so they're going to need Republicans. Excellent question. You guys made this mess. You guys clean it up. Because right now I'm not hearing any talk, at least not yet, of a bill that would essentially, you know, waive PAYGO in this case and say it doesn't apply in this matter. But I talked to, you know, left-leaning budgeting experts as this bill was moving through Congress, and they didn't want to discuss this at all because they think that, well, not only Medicare cuts, but there's also, you know, cuts to stuff that Republicans like, defense, et cetera, and so that this will probably be, you know, waived with a piece of legislation. But I'm wondering,
what are Democrats going to get out of that? I mean, Democrats will hold the key. You need 60 votes to do it. So Democrats will hold the key to being able to waive those cuts.
Mm-hmm.
So what are Democrats going to say? Okay, you want to waive those cuts? What are you going to give me for that? Are you going to repeal some of the Medicaid cuts? Are you going to repeal some of the food stamp cuts? What are you going to do in order for me to agree to help you out, to get you out of the mess, Republicans, that you created with this bill? That's the question that Democrats should be asking.
Well, and do you have the impression that they're going to do anything? Republicans will just turn around and say, if you don't vote for this, you're cutting $500 billion from Medicare, Democrats. And
which is obviously not true. The cuts were the die was cast on those cuts when Republicans passed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. So it's their fault. It's their problem. Democrats have done a decent job of blaming Republicans for all of the things happening in that bill.
Yeah,
they could just as easily blame them for Medicare cuts because it would have the benefit of being true.
Yeah.
And if they want to get out of them, I think Democrats have to exact the price for that. There are very few moments where they've had leverage in this Congress, and this would be one of them.
You're right. And I do have some concerns because there's also across-the-board cuts to other things, like I said, that Republicans like, defense and national security and so forth. But they've just bumped up defense and national security and all of that stuff in this last bill. So that might not be the price that it normally is. For Republicans. Is that true?
I mean, first of all, there are going to be some Republicans that are just not going to want to waive that. They're going to see it as an opportunity to cut Medicare because they don't like the program, right? So they're happy with automatic cuts.
Right.
So that's number one. And number two is there aren't enough Republicans in the Senate to pass a waiver like that on their own. So either way, Democrats are going to hold the key here as to whether those, including those cuts that that Republicans don't want, like defense cuts, happen. And so what are they going to do about it?
Are you hearing, David Dayan, any talk out of D.C. about what they are going to do about it, if there is going to be a bill to waive PAYGO here? Because I haven't heard anything about it discussed yet. I see no bill proposed.
Zippo. Nothing.
Right.
But it ties into what we're about to talk about, which is at the same time, there is this potential for massive increases in health insurance because of the expiration of the Affordable Care Act enhanced premiums, which if that were allowed to go into place and those enhanced premiums were allowed to expire, it would create this huge cliff on health insurance such that the estimate is that 5 million people would lose their health insurance, and that health insurance for people making over 400% of the poverty line, for example, the price of that would go up by 75% on average.
Yeah.
So one thing that Democrats could say is, oh, do you want me to waive the Medicare cuts and PAYGO and also waive the defense cuts and other things? Extend the health insurance premium support through the ACA for another couple years. So there's certainly horse trading that can be done. I haven't heard about what might be done, but they should start thinking about it.
Well, they should, because we're talking about effectively when these additional premiums that were – or additional subsidies for premiums were put in place, again, by Biden and the Democrats – they time out at the end of this year. They will go away, as that letter was indicating from Covered California that I shared with you. This is going to affect a huge number of people across the country. And so we're talking about huge Medicaid cuts, huge Medicare cuts, huge Affordable Care Act cuts. I mean, I don't know that we have ever seen a shock to the healthcare system like this in the history of the nation. Am I right about that? If these all go forward as they're on a trajectory to do right now?
Right. And I would agree with you. And I think that is going to cause a catastrophic situation for the healthcare system in general.
Uh-huh.
So you're talking about not just rural hospitals, but all hospitals around the country contending with millions of new uninsured, millions of new patients coming to the emergency room and seeking, because in the United States, you get emergency care if you ask for it, whether you can afford it or not. That uncompensated care goes on the balance sheets of those hospitals. And so there's this massive new burden. It's going to lead to staffing issues. It's going to lead to cuts to services, potentially. It's going to lead to much longer wait times. It's going to lead to much longer travel times. If your rural hospital closes, you might have to go 2, 3, 4 hours to find the next nearest hospital if you have an emergency. And that is going to be all across the country throughout the health system. The idea that you could be shielded from that because you live in a particular area is very unlikely. You're talking about so much money being taken out of the health system. It can't help but affect every hospital and healthcare provider in America. And so, you know, we're on this collision course and Congress right now has made its decision and they would have to affirmatively act to change that decision.
To change both of the decisions regarding
Medicare,
all of this.
I mean,
you know,
Congress can do whatever it wants. It can reverse all of these things, but, you know, it's unlikely that Republicans are going to want to do that. But they might, for reasons of self-preservation, not want to collapse the healthcare system in this country. So we'll see what they are willing to do.
We will see, because they just, you know, increased the national debt by about $3.5 trillion with their big, beautiful bill. So the idea that now they're going to want to spend a whole lot of money to shore up the ACA with these expiring tax credits and so forth. That's a question that remains to be seen, but it seems like it is. And by the way, all of this will be happening during an election year in 2026. I'm wondering if that will make a difference to Republicans' thinking here. David, isn't it arguably political malpractice at this point by the Democrats that so few Americans seem to even understand what is going on here, what is about to hit them, not next year or the end of next year, but in a matter of months at this point when it's time to re-up the 2026 coverage of the ACA in all 50 states?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, you can only hide this for so long. There are 24 million people on the insurance exchanges, the Affordable Care Act exchanges. And they're going to get letters, just like the letter you read from Covered California. And they're not going to be general, like your premiums are going up. They're going to say, hey, your premium, you, Brad Friedman, your premium is going up 75% this year. And that's going to be hard to avoid politically. That's going to cause major problems. It's going to happen in October of this year, October, November. People are going to get those notices unless something is done by Congress. And I would argue that until they get those notices, Congress probably isn't going to react until they get the angry letters and calls that will be spurred by those notices from their insurance company.
It seems like we are heading off. You know, we've talked for many years about fiscal cliffs that Republicans love running right up to. Looks like this is a healthcare cliff, and it looks like it starts as early as October 1, right around the time those letters will come out telling people what their rates will be next year on the Affordable Care Act exchanges, and when it will be announced that, yeah, $50 billion will have to be cut from Medicare unless Congress acts before that. And by the way, they've only got 4 weeks when they come back now from summer break before all of this happens.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, that $50 billion is likely to be cut from reimbursement for hospitals and doctors. So just as hospitals are absorbing this future blow of Medicaid cuts and things like that and more uninsured, they're going to say here, oh, your reimbursement rate, it's going to go down next year. So when you treat sick patients, senior patients, you're going to get less money for that. And that the finances aren't going to be able to work out for a lot of these hospitals.
No.
So, you know, it's not just individuals seeing their premiums jump that Congress is going to hear from. It's going to be hospitals,
yep,
hospital lobbyists, and the kind of people that, that Congress kind of listens to rather than ordinary schlubs like you and me. And so it's going to be, you know, the fiscal cliff mentality, the idea that something needs to be done to fix this. You're going to start hearing that this fall in October, in November. And we'll see what Congress is going to be able to do, because really they're going to have to unwind some of the things that they just got done passing in July.
Yep. Sounds like it's time for another pop-up newsletter at the Prospect on the healthcare fiscal cliff, frankly. If and when that happens, and even before it does.
Thanks for being my assignment editor, Brian.
You're welcome. Go get them. I'm counting on you, my friend. If and when that happens, you'll be able to sign up over at prospect.org. Until then, you'll be able to read all of David's work over there. You can also find him on The Blue Skies at D. Dayan. And you can and should buy his book, the latest one, Monopolized: Life in the Age of Corporate Power. Not that it has any relevance whatsoever to everything that is going on in this nation right now. David Dayan, a delight speaking with you as ever, my friend. Thank you, sir.
All right, thanks.
We'll talk soon. Yikes. Well, it is really bad. It is really bad. It's really all happening at the same time, it seems like, coming up in the next few weeks, the next couple of months. It is remarkable to me that, A, the media ain't covering it, but that might be because, B, the Democrats are not really talking about this. I suspect they will at some point. But, boy, now seems to be a good time. I know there's a lot of other stuff going on, as I said, at the top of the show. And you may want to talk about that. You may want to talk about this. Our phone number is 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. If you have any thoughts, questions, concerns about all of this, I would love to hear from you. Hit button number one when you call in. Number two is for folks who are donating. But this is a big deal. Medicare, Medicaid, Affordable Care Act, all being sort of defunded here at once. I don't hear you there. Can we try again, Des?
Try it now.
There we go. Getting warmer. Keep going, Wendell. Now I got you.
All right, let's
try
that.
Okay. Perfect.
Now it's coming. That was awesome. Okay, so basically my first thought was, yes, this sounds like a giant sucking sound of all the money being sucked out of the healthcare system,
yep,
pretty much as David Dayan predicted, and how people are not going to be ready for that. The entire system is not going to be ready for that. And hopefully folks will take a moment to think about what that means for their finances, because it could be a big deal. But also I think they're part of the reason why it's not being talked about is because, remember, the U.S. House is now on vacation because Speaker Johnson did not want to allow any opportunity for a vote to release the Epstein files.
But that does not prevent Democrats from raising holy hell about all of
this,
this 24/7 and actually frees up their time to do exactly that.
Good point.
To be frank.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm sort of looking at these numbers. I'm reading David Dayan's work. I'm reading other people on this. And I'm, you know, seeing what's going on and how these cuts are coming in, are barreling in. And you can see them right up ahead. This is not some time in the future. As David said, it's not at the end of next year after the midterms. It is now. And, you know, at one point, there weren't all that many, I guess, initially on the Affordable Care Act exchanges, Obamacare. Now we're talking about 30 million people who are about to see the costs for their premiums go up as much as 75% every month. Add to that the cost of prescription drugs, the cost of, you know, co-pays and all of that. And by the way, when it comes to prescription drugs and medical equipment, a lot of that stuff comes from overseas.
Ah, yes.
Guess what that means? That means tariffs are going to be increasing the cost of those.
For
that,
consumers, yes.
Yep, it's going to be added to everything else that is going to end up costing all of us. And we seem to be the only ones talking about it.
I know. It's going to be a very big shift into the economy, because the money that people would normally be spending on goods and services in their own lives will then have to go toward paying higher insurance premiums. And, of course, as you mentioned, all the inflation of just trying to get medical care. So, yeah, some fun times ahead.
818-985-5735 is our phone number. If you've got any thoughts on this, on Epstein, on what you think we should be talking about over your public airwaves before you lose them more than you already have. 818-985-KPFK. Hit button number one to join us on the air. Number two to donate to our ongoing KPFK fund drive. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back with your calls and some other news if you don't have anything to say at 818-985-5735. I'm Brad Friedman and you are listening to The Bradcast.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and The Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast.
Black day in July. Black day in July. The printing press is turning and the news is quickly flashed. And you read your morning paper and you sip your cup of tea and you wonder just in passing, is it him or is it me?
It's him. It's definitely him. Welcome back to The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Going to go to your calls momentarily at 818-985-KPFK. But speaking of health care, specifically Medicaid in this case, some moderately good news for the moment from the U.S. District Courts today. A federal judge on Monday blocked enforcement of a provision in Donald Trump's recently enacted tax and spending bill that would deprive Planned Parenthood and its members of Medicaid funding, even for non-abortion services, finding that to be likely unconstitutional. U.S. District Judge Indira Talwani in Boston issued a preliminary injunction after finding the law likely violates the U.S. Constitution by targeting Planned Parenthood's health centers specifically as punishment for providing abortions. Yes, that includes even the health centers who do not do that. That provision in the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill Act, passed by the Republican-led Congress, denied certain tax-exempt organizations and their affiliates from receiving Medicaid funds if they continue to provide abortions, even though federal law already bans the use of federal funding for abortion in all but the most extreme emergencies. And it is banned by dozens of states at this point altogether. Talwani, Judge Talwani, an appointee of Barack Obama, said the law's text and structure made clear that it was crafted to cover every member of Planned Parenthood Federation of America, the parent organization. That specificity likely transformed the provision at issue into an unconstitutional so-called bill of attainder. That's an act of Congress that seeks to inflict punishment without a trial. That is unlawful. The judge wrote, plaintiffs are likely to establish that Congress singled them out with punitive intent, which is unlawful. At least it used to be. We'll see how things go when it gets to the corrupted activist right-wing U.S. Supreme Court, which has had the habit of late of simply making up laws and constitutional provisions to give Trump whatever he wants. So we will see. But the lower court judge said that the law also violated Planned Parenthood's Planned Parenthood members' equal protection rights under the U.S. Constitution's Fifth Amendment and burden the right of some who do not provide abortions to associate with their parent organization in likely violation of the First Amendment. Yes, even Planned Parenthood businesses, health centers that do not provide abortions are also being cut off by this Trump GOP bill from the ability to accept Medicaid patients under this Trump big beautiful bill. Last week, the judge had issued a partial injunction that only covered some Planned Parenthood members. The organization said many health centers were forced to stop billing for Medicaid services ahead of Monday's ruling. Now, Planned Parenthood, the nonprofit health organization which provides many services, often to low-income patients, has said that the law would have, quote, catastrophic consequences for its nearly 600 health centers, putting nearly 200 of them in 24 states at risk of closure. In a statement, the Planned Parenthood Federation of America's president said, quote, we will keep fighting this cruel law so that everyone can get birth control, sexually transmitted infection testing and treatment, cancer screening, and other critical health care, no matter their insurance. So some good news there for the moment, but I think we've learned over the past few months not to count any chickens until the Republican Supreme Court justices have had their chance to hatch a corrupt ruling from the high court.
Oh, goody. Can't wait.
818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Jackie in Pomona. Hey, Jackie. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, thank you. I just want to let you know that before everybody finds out everything, Maxwell's father and relatives were part of the Israeli army. And when you read the Israeli papers, you know a lot more about Donald Trump's
let me jump in here. You're saying Ghislaine Maxwell's, the accomplice to Jeffrey Epstein, who's now serving 20 years in a Florida prison, you're saying her father was part of the Israeli army and that...
she has family that's been in part of the Israeli army.
Okay.
And Israel, this nut in Israel, he knows everything that he's got on Trump. But too bad, so does Putin. Everybody's got something on Trump, but they just won't come out with it yet. But he's
so let me ask.
Trump will be dead before everybody finds out what's really going on.
And let me ask you this, Jackie: what does the fact that, and I don't know if it's true. Let me be clear. I'll assume it's true that Ghislaine Maxwell's father was in the Israeli army. But what does that have to do with anything?
Well, that Trump is good for nothing. Everybody's got something on him, and I don't know why they don't come out and just tell people what he's done so they can get rid of him. Because he gets rid of a lot of people, just like Putin does, and nobody knows where to find these people because they're nowhere around.
Everybody may have something on Donald Trump. I don't disagree with you. And there are plenty of reasons to be critical of Israel right now under the Benjamin, that's an understatement, under the Netanyahu government. But I'm not sure why tying, whether it's true or not, tying the fact that Ghislaine Maxwell's father was a member of the, I mean, anybody who ever lived in Israel essentially has been a member of the military.
She's actually from Europe.
But why are you using that to slam?
Because they know the Israeli, this Netanyahu, he's really something else. They're no good. All of them. Putin, Netanyahu, Trump, all of them. They're no good. All these communist countries, Brazil, the Philippines, you know, all these countries that have these people that want to be kings.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm saying, yeah, I agree with you. They're no good. Putin, Netanyahu, Trump, all the rest. I'm just not sure why Ghislaine Maxwell's father being in the Israeli army has anything to do with it.
Because they know what's going on. They know. The family knows what's going on.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Jackie. I appreciate that call.
Okay.
818.
All right. People should look into that.
Thank you. 818-985-KPFK. That's 818-985-5735. You will need to hit the button number one to join us on the air, though we do hope many of you also hit button number two to help us stay on the air beyond today and beyond this year. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Harold in Santa Barbara. Hey, Harold, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Well, thank you. In my hometown of Redlands and Loma Linda, they already are, doing this. I mean, for example, I have Medi-Cal, and but it's Santa Barbara. If you have Medi-Cal and your home address is in Redlands and Loma Linda, you can't go to Loma Linda University or almost every hospital in the area. You have to go to a clinic, and most people have to use the bus. So it's a two-hour ride by bus. It's crazy. They're already doing it.
Medi-Cal, and I don't know if what you're describing there, Harold, is actually a change. Are you saying, well, just so people know out there, Medi-Cal, yikes, can you bring him down, Wendell? Thank you. Medi-Cal is actually California's version of Medicaid. So I don't know, Harold, is that you're saying a change to Medi-Cal that was not there before, or is that just the deficiency of Medicaid in general here in California?
It's particular to each county in California. For example, in Santa Barbara, they have CenCal. But in San Bernardino County, where Redlands and Loma Linda are located, it is the general Medi-Cal that's operated by the state of California.
Okay.
And it has to do with funding. But the funding is dependent on the way they categorize it.
Mm-hmm.
So they have numbers, and these numbers are assigned. Like if you have to have knee surgery,
mm-hmm.
they assign a number, and then they get approval.
Right. Well, you know, there are problems within Medicaid, period, and then problems for each state because each state runs their Medicaid programs a little bit differently. What I'm trying to determine is if this was an existing problem in California's version of Medicaid or if you're suggesting that this is a problem of something that happened recently thanks to the changes in the bill, so-called Big Beautiful Bill, et cetera. It sounds like this is an existing problem with Medicaid that this bill that just passed will do anything but make better. It will, in fact, make such problems like this worse.
Yeah, you're right. What happened recently is they are cleansing. Well, people are losing their coverage of Medicare through that. Bush or whoever was selling this other alternative insurance. And this agency, one of the requirements, if you want to be seen by the local hospital, you have to switch to this other coverage. And that means you have to sell your Medicare rights to that company. And I can't remember the name of the company. You've talked about it, and so has several announcers.
Point being here, it seems to me, we ought to be improving health care in this country. Many people think that Medicare for all is the solution, but many people enjoy Obamacare, that has brought health care to a lot of folks who could not afford it previously. Many people use Medicaid. Many have no choice but to use Medicaid. Of course, older people rely on Medicare, which is certainly imperfect. All of these systems are both needed and flawed, at least for now. And it seems to me we ought to be spending time fixing those systems, improving those systems, rather than gutting them. And yet, at the same time, that is exactly what's happening. They are being gutted. If you don't like Medicare, Medicaid, or the Affordable Care Act now for whatever reason, that reason is going to get even worse in the very near days ahead. Thank you, Harold. I appreciate that call, sir. 818-985-KPFK, 818-985-5735. I mentioned the encouraging ruling from the lower court. I have surprising, but this is good news from the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm going to rub my eyes here and make sure I'm understanding this correctly. But this was a bit of good news from the U.S. Supreme Court for a very welcome change last week in a story that we have been covering closely on this show. The U.S. Supreme Court paused, for now, a lower court ruling that bars individuals in seven Midwestern states from being able to bring racial discrimination lawsuits under the landmark Voting Rights Act, an unprecedented finding for the first time from a federal appeals court. Determined that because the Voting Rights Act, the VRA, does not specifically say that private individuals and private voting rights groups, et cetera, can bring lawsuits to enforce the to enforce violations of the act, that the Justice Department is the only entity that can bring legal actions to challenge voting laws and rules that are alleged to be racially biased. That's what the appeals court has decided. That would mean, of course, that, for example, during a Republican administration, we might see likely zero enforcement of the Voting Rights Act, with the appeals court ruling ignoring hundreds of Voting Rights Acts over the cases over the years that have been brought without incident by private parties, including many that made it to the Supreme Court, which then had said nothing about this notion that private parties do not have the right to sue under the act. The lower court's decision, which has for now been put on hold as of late last week by the U.S. Supremes, applied only to states in the Eighth Circuit. That would include North Dakota, South Dakota, Arkansas, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, and Nebraska. But if you lived in any one of those states and you were racially discriminated against via a new voting law or rule, you would not have the right to sue anymore against the Voting Rights Act in those states.
Even though you are personally affected as a voter in one of those states, you don't have a right to sue. You don't have standing to sue, even though it affects you directly.
Under this appeals court ruling.
Which flies in the face of hundreds of previous precedents.
And, by the way,
precedents.
It flies in the face of the lower court, the U.S. District Judge, who said, that's not the case. The appeals court sort of took it upon themselves to do it. And now the U.S. Supreme Court has said, no, wait a minute, that's going too far, even for us at this point. The justices sided in this case for now with Native American tribes that had sought the emergency stay at the high court, arguing that the decision by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit gutted the powerful tool that helps ensure voting maps are drawn equitably. The justices did not offer a rationale for their ruling, which was issued on the emergency docket or the so-called shadow docket, where many adverse rulings have been issued of late without explanation by the majority either. In this case, however, it appears that enough Republican appointees were able to join all three of the liberal justices to block the enforcement of this court ruling below for the moment. The right-wing justices Clarence Thomas, Sam Alito, and Neil Gorsuch, they all wrote in this order that they would not have granted the stay. They would have continued to block the right for voters who were discriminated against and voting rights groups to sue to enforce the Voting Rights Act. In this case, we've been covering it for a while on this show. The Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians and the Spirit Lake Tribe had filed suit back in 2022, alleging that a new North Dakota legislative map drawn by the state's GOP-controlled legislature unlawfully diluted the power of the indigenous vote. The map reduced from 3 to 1 the number of seats that the tribes had, quote, an equal opportunity to elect for the state legislature. A lower federal district court, as I said, the judge agreed with the tribes in this case, but a divided U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit overturned that lower court ruling. The activist appeals court did not rule on the merits of the tribe's argument. They just simply said, oh, you don't have a right to sue here. Get lost. You don't have standing. Finding that the lower court judges were misconstruing Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act for all of these years by allowing individuals to challenge voting laws. Who knew, going back decades, hundreds of lawsuits, that, that's not even allowed by the law, according to this ruling?
It's almost like they're like, okay, we've run out of ideas for preventing people from voting.
Exactly.
So we're just going to throw this one out. Nobody has the right to sue unless the Republican Department of Justice decides decides that there's a reason to.
By the way, one of the plaintiffs in the case was Colette Brown, a legislator who is a plaintiff in this case, whose seat would have been written out by this. Even she's not allowed to sue, if you believe the appellate court, that the Supremes did not buy. The tribes wrote in asking the high court to intervene here about the appellate ruling. They said they kneecap Congress's most important civil rights statute. That blow is especially harmful to Native Americans and these plaintiffs in particular. North Dakota, like many states, has a long and sad history of official discrimination against Native Americans that clearly persists to this day. And if it was up to the state and the appeals court judges, those discriminated against would never have the chance to sue to stop it. They would have to wait for the Trump administration and their DOJ to do so when, by the way, Biden's DOJ in this case had supported it, had supported the tribes. But then Trump came into office and the DOJ changed their mind, changed their position on this case. The tribe said in a court filing that individuals have brought more than 400 challenges to voting laws under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. Other circuits have ruled that individuals do have the right to file challenges under the statute, according to the tribes. As the Post gently notes, the Supreme Court has pared back voting rights in recent years, most notably striking down a provision of the law that required states, mainly in the South, to get approval by the federal government before changing the way their elections are held. That would be Section 5. They killed that. They're hoping to kill Section 2 now as well. For the moment, the U.S. Supreme Court of all institutions is stopping them from doing so. That's good news. Let's get out with some good news today.
Yes, please.
My thanks to our guest today, David Doyon, to my board operator, Wendell.
Dan, I'm Doyon.
What did I? Oh, I said Doyon?
Yes.
Damn it. David Dayan, thank you, from the American Prospect. David Desi Doyon, our producer, and Wendell Handy, our board operator. I didn't screw that part up. And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can download them all for free at bradblog.com. Share them with folks you know, love, and or hate. That is free thanks to support from folks like you. Drop me an email on bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, you'll find me at TheBradBlog. See you there until we see you here. Hopefully tomorrow. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.